everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
Today, we're going to be talking with Ellen of Deity Animal Rescue, which is a nonprofit rescue organization based in Los Angeles, California. It is their passion and mission to rescue, rehabilitate, and place stray and neglected shelter dogs into loving, responsible, and committed homes. So without further ado, let's get started.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
I'm doing well. You guys, thank you for having me.
We're so honored to have you, especially I feel like we love featuring rescues right in our own backyard. It's very fun because we certainly know there's just so many different areas in California. It's so diverse and you travel 20 minutes and you're somewhere totally different. Well, so tell us, let's kind of go back in time. Tell us how you got started in animal welfare.
Actually, pre-Facebook, I used to volunteer for a friend of mine. She had a rescue called Animal Advocates Alliance. Every weekend, they would pull dogs and cats from the city and county shelters, and they would, in Malibu or at the farmer's market, they would hold adoption events, and I would just hold leashes for them. And I would also walk dogs at shelters just to help out where I can, where I could. And in 2007, I became a mommy of a human child. So that kind of took up all my free time. I didn't really have the luxury of doing the dogs every weekend. My business at the time was as a jewelry designer. I remember during my son's nap time one day, I started designing jewelry for rescue. So I would do little paws or little things that said adopt on it, little charms, just different things. And I would then be able to give back to rescue still, but in a monetary way. And then Facebook came to be. I guess I got on it in 2000, end of 2007 or 2008. Facebook being what it is, I kept getting tagged on all these urgent dogs, our very high kill city and county shelters. And I realized that I kind of got lucky at putting dogs and people together, networking these animals and getting them safe and either getting them into a foster home or helping to get them to a rescue by transporting for them. You kind of get hooked on that type of thing. You realize that, hey, you know what? I have a little bit of time I can spend on putting this together for this particular dog. And after a while, I was actually in Pittsburgh with my mom and she used to run a nonprofit for oncology nurses. So she's like, let's make you a nonprofit. And that was 2016. In 2017, I got a DM from my now, I call her my work wife, but my rescue partner, Lindsay. She slid into my DMs and she's like, I want to help. We started working together and then formed a partnership and the rest is history. It kind of just kept snowballing and snowballing. And here we are.
I love how you started out like that, because I think so many people think that when they're volunteering for a rescue, it like has to be this all-encompassing thing that like they're doing the books or they're cleaning kennels and they have this like really grimy idea of it. But it's like just holding leashes helps so much because I mean, can you imagine if like one rescuer was holding like 20 leashes and she was like looked panicked and all the dogs were stressed out? And it's like no one would adopt those animals.
I think you kind of nailed it too, because holding the leash of a dog and getting to know that dog over the course of those, whatever it was, 3 hours, there was no way I was letting that dog get back on that truck and to an uncertain fate, let's say, if dog didn't end up getting adopted. Like I said, it was like one and two dogs here and there at that point, but those dogs, I would end up going and either pulling through that rescue or adopting myself and then finding a home for the dog, because I just couldn't bear the thought of something happening and that dog not getting out alive. But to your point, it is like on whatever level people can help. We tell our village, we call them, like, even if it means sharing a post for you guys, that is spreading awareness about a dog in need. And you know what? Who knows who's going to see that and connect with that, those eyes of that dog. Like, it happens. It's so important on every single level in rescue. We all need to work together. We all need to do whatever it is that fits in our world that we can do. You don't need to foster. You don't need to be close enough that you go pick up the dog and transport it. But hey, you can share the dog. Or if you're having a good day and you have $5 that you want to send so that we can pay someone else gas money to go get the dog and transport the dog. It all adds up, and together is the way we do this.
From my experience too, like, I know I've held those leashes and you get a little competitive a little bit, and you're like, because people are coming up to you and they're hemming and hawing, like, maybe I want this dog. And you're like, I wish I could take this dog home. You're like looking over at everyone else, like, my dog's going to get adopted. Like, I'm rooting for this guy. Like, it's a very fun thing to be a part of an animal's life in like whatever capacity you can, definitely. I mean, the fact too that you and Lindsay came together over social media is just like, it's like a sign of the times.
We totally joke about that too. I'm like, I'm older. For me, social media is like I didn't grow up with it. So I've had to learn social media. And, you know, I just laugh at the term, she slid into my DMs, because she did. I'm like, and you know, at the time it was Instagram, and there's that like that mailbox that unless you know to check, you don't know it's there. One day I just remember like, oh wait, what the heck is this? Like, what are all these emails? And I just remember going through the list of emails, and there's Lindsay. She's like, hi, my name is Lindsay and I've been following you and I love what you do and I love the dogs. And I just want to let you know that I'm here to help. Here's my number. Give me a call. And, you know, we joke about that now, because who knew from that little email the things that we'd be doing together and the time that we'd be spending together. And so it's pretty amazing. The lesson with Lindsay was an eye-opener. Like, we try and be pretty good opening our eyes in the morning, and before even getting out of bed, I will go through our inbox. Because you never know what's in there. Often we get urgent dogs sent to us that we may not have seen otherwise. Currently, with the situation with the pandemic and the shelters being closed, there's people who need to surrender their dogs. There's people who are finding dogs on the street and can't take them anywhere. The shelters, unless you make an appointment, aren't really accepting animals. So definitely more so than before. In our DMs on a regular, consistent basis are animals in need that we have taken in and we can help.
So you mentioned your jewelry, and I looked over it. It's so cute. It's so sweet. And so you're still doing that. Is that, so between rescue and jewelry, is that everything, like as far as work that you do?
We are very blessed. We have space that was donated to us in Beverly Hills. So we have the cutest little, it was an office space, but there's a front room area that we've turned into retail when we're kind of maxed out as far as our emotional space, headspace goes. Lindsay and I both have come from a design background, and we pull out the jewelry and we make jewelry because we find that it calms us. It centers us. Every once in a while, we can sell a piece and 100% of the proceeds goes to our dogs. It's just kind of like a meditative thing for us at this point. We have big dreams of grandeur that when this pandemic is over, we can bring someone in to actually run the store. We design and sell apparel, candles, jewelry. It's kind of grown from the jewelry. We also partner with other small businesses, other women-owned brands, a lot of vegan and eco-friendly lines as well. There's a bunch of cute things in the front of the store at this point, it's just kind of online just because we can't really be open, or we really, when we're here, we're working, we have a kind of studio space in the back room that is all like IKEA furniture with computers on it. And we're that this is where we come to work. It's kind of like our quarantine adjacent at the moment. And it's Lindsay and it's her twin sister, Amanda, and our friend Hannah as well. So there's pretty much four of us consistently working with the rescue at this point.
I can definitely understand like the whole meditative process of like, it's, and I think Sydney and I are a little bit similar in that we're both like a little bit, I mean, I guess what you call like introverts, like we like the reading and we like little projects. So, I mean, I can totally see how, especially I feel like so many things in rescue can feel chaotic and like you can't control it. So having that little thing that you're like, I can do this one thing and I can accomplish this.
Where you can put all of your energy, where you don't have to focus on all of the chaoticness of the world. You just get to sit there and you get to create something beautiful and you're by yourself.
And they say that like women across the world who like sit in knitting circles or whatever they're making, women who work with their hands and work together as a collaborative thing are like, it's a form of good witchcraft. It's a form of magic. I read that somewhere and I truly believe that because when you are sitting there working with your hands, you are still on whatever level doing such good for the world. And for us specifically, whatever little necklace or bracelets we're making, when they sell, they do end up helping to vaccinate a puppy or whatever's needed in that day or week.
For Deity itself, are you guys a foster-based rescue?
We are 100% foster-based, yes. We do have the space, and we bring the dogs here. Our available dogs will come here to get picked up to go to foster or for meet and greet situations. I'd say the best thing about our store is when we do pull the dogs from the shelter, after we get them to our vet and checked out, we bring them here and they just get a chance to decompress. And we really get a chance to get to know their personalities. I would say one of the most beautiful things about our job, if you want to call it our job, is the blessing that we have in bearing witness to the decompression of these dogs when they get out of the shelter, and that the comfy sofa in the back of our space is where they go to do that, because it's just such a beautiful, like, just to like breathe them in as they're taking their first breaths of freedom. Just even in the midst of like a chaotic world that we're living in, animal welfare issues that you guys and us, like on a daily basis, we open our phone and we bear witness to, like, to know that you've given this gift, this blessing of a new leash on life, so to speak, and to watch it happen is just everything, you know. And it kind of, in our deepest moments of compassion fatigue, which I am here to tell you is a real thing, that kind of brings you back a little bit, a lot, actually.
Absolutely. I mean, you said so much, and I think it's something that we've seen as many, I think so many rescuers too, they try to put on this like brave face, and granted are so very strong. But at the same time, like we see like, oh my gosh, like we see this like tip of the iceberg of all the heartbreak that you're dealing with. And it's like, so we know like that's sometimes it's just a face and there's a real broken heart underneath it. So it's something that we definitely empathize so much with. I mean, and that's why I mentioned, like I asked if you were foster-based, because I know we've worked with some rescues who do the same thing where they have this retail space where their dogs kind of hang out. And it's like such a beneficial thing. Of course, like it's nice that you have a shop, and but also like there's these animals who are finally getting a moment to like breathe in like a real, like a homey situation. And who doesn't love like a shop dog or cat? Like, I'm a sucker for any like little retail space that has an animal. I'm like, okay, I'm a fan of your brand.
Yeah. And there have been nights that we have just spent the night on the sofa with the animals instead, you know, if their foster can't get them that day or whatever, like you can't, like, you know, to have to send them the vet to for the night or whatever just isn't an option in our hearts. There have been plenty of times where animals come in late and in the day and the fosters can't come and grab them. And we just, everybody's happy here. So we just have a slumber party.
So I know too, I have to mention, so you work with Dope Dog, who we actually know and love. They're such a wonderful brand. So I'm wondering how that collaboration and partnership kind of came about.
We saw them on Instagram. We started chatting. They were actually very close. They live close to our store here. And they came in and we all just hit it off. Not to mention they have an amazing product. I don't know if you saw in our store, this morning I put in our stories, I have a senior pit bull, a big senior pit bull, and she's very arthritic. So like Dope Dog is our life. Like the Dope Dog keeps her going and keeps her smiling. She's a dog who literally smiles. And I told them, I'm like, I swear to God, she's still smiling because of you guys. I mean that. And I pull out the bottle and she knows exactly, like she only gets like a part of the dropper full, but she's ready. And I don't have to put it in anything. She loves it. It just really kind of, I can tell that she's in less pain, less uncomfortable. I don't think she's in pain. Arthritis, you can see when they aren't feeling great. The Dope Dog definitely takes the edge off for her. But yeah, we just like hit it off and we've done parties here with them. This year, we feel so blessed because we're actually, they chose us as the rescue that they're partnering with. You know, again, with this pandemic, I feel so bad because nobody can really come in the store, but their products are front and center when you walk in our store. That's kind of what you see is the Dope Dog stuff. We do online. They are on our website as well. They are amazing. And their products, anyone who has ever come in here and bought their products, we've only heard rave reviews.
Yeah, I love that too, that you're partnering with like this very local, holistic brand that is all like very dog focused and helping dogs like health improve. That's amazing. And I mean, it doesn't hurt that they're benefiting you this year. So that's wonderful. Yeah. I mean, I know as like a, just like as a CBD tincture, so many of us in the company have helped ourselves to a lot of different things and given our pets some. And I know specifically like, so Sydney's sister, Sam, it's really helped her dog a lot. I guess he started having seizures.
Yeah, he has like epilepsy. He has, it's weird. He's only about a year and a half old, but he has major joint pain. He shakes. He has a really hard time sitting sometimes. He has to lay down just because his legs hurt so much. They don't know. He was a rescue. He kind of looks like a golden retriever. They did end up doing it's so funny. They ended up doing a DNA test on him. And he came back such a wacky amount of things. He came back like dachshund. He came back husky. And he's a huge dog that he just looks like a golden retriever. So we just call him a golden retriever. But he's got a little few ticks and you know, a few issues that unfortunately he has to deal with very early on. But she loves the CBD. She uses it like religiously, I want to say like twice a day, maybe three times a day.
Yeah, that's what I give her too, twice in the morning with breakfast and then in the evening as well.
And it helps. It really does.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I mean, we're all about it. I feel like so many people think, and I mean, rightfully so, there are so many fads out there. So many people think it's a fad, which it a little bit is, but it's like a really good fad.
And, you know, even though like our vets can't prescribe the CBD, you know that when you hear from multiple vets that you actually respect and trust, and they're like, oh, and you can add in, I can't tell you to do this, but you can try the CBD. Like there must be some, you've got to put some trust in that too, that they're saying it, but not really saying it.
Well, and I love the fact that with CBD too, it has, or so I hear, I know vets can't really say it. It doesn't affect the organ so much as a different, like a steroid would or other kind of medications. It's very easy on the body. So it's very safe to use very, very consistently. I mean, look at her. She's using it 3 times a day and he's absolutely wonderful and healthy.
Well, no, I was just going to say, so he had a really bad few seizures, I guess. And since she started giving that to him, he's stopped having seizures altogether. So like, that's like a night and day difference. I know too, we have worked together on a few different things, but I'm wondering if maybe you can maybe talk a little bit about some of the animals that have really had really transformative stories that you've taken in and animals that I think really that stick with you. Because I think sometimes when animals are pulled from shelters, you kind of have this thought in the back of your head of like, I did it before, I can do it again. So I'm wondering if you have any really inspirational stories that you've experienced.
I'm going to preface this by saying it's been quite a few weeks around here. So if I get emotional, I apologize ahead of time because pretty much every animal, I don't think, and you guys know this too, because just by association that we're all in this together working for these animals, like you get to know their stories. As human beings who, if we're animal lovers, if we're doing this because we love it, like we're just so vibrational anyways, it's hard not to take in all of that. When you look at stories, I'm going to go back to Meriwether because hers is a story of she came from such a horrible situation with horrific crimes that were committed against her and her body by humans. And we won't go into that, but this is a girl who afterwards was left on the train tracks to die. She was left to nobody that was, could have been her end result. But thankfully, an officer found her and brought her to the shelter. And from there, it required 3 surgeries to put her back together after what humans had done to her. This is a girl who, even though she went through all of that, harbored 0 resentment to men, humans. She just woke up the next day with a smile on her face, love in her heart, gratitude. We met her. I just remember her when we opened up the door. She had been, you know, we had was actually a friend of Fiona Apples who had read her story on our Instagram. Fiona, at the time, we were looking for transport to get Meriwether up here in order to get her safe from the shelter that she was in. She was actually safe there, but they just didn't have any foot traffic. It was a very rural shelter. So we figured if we brought her here, could get her treated for the heartworm, then we could help to find her a home, which luckily that's what ended up happening. When Fiona Apple initially read about her story, she again slid into my DMs, and I'm an 80s, 90s chick. So like, the girls who were here that day, they're like, oh yeah, Fiona Apple, my mom loves her. And I'm like, oh my God, you guys, like Fiona Apple is my number one girl crush. You have no idea, you know, because like DM was like Sarah123. It wasn't Fiona Apple, but that was her name. But like in the message, it said, hi, I'm Fiona Apple. Please call me. I want to help you get this dog here. So long story short, her friend, she paid for the plane ticket to fly her friend down there to pick up Meriwether. And we also brought another dog back with her, Lola. And it took them almost 4 days to make that drive. I just remember we were there to meet the car at our vet when they arrived. When we opened the door, and it was the front seat of the front door of the car, and Lola's sitting in the front seat and she's looking at us and her little tail is doing a little flop. And Meriwether, who had been riding in the back seat, she poked her nose through the center console and she was like looking at me like, okay, I think something big is about to happen. I'm not sure. And just by Meriwether's like gentle personality with dogs and the fact that she takes cues from those around her. She was looking to Lola for kind of just validation that this was cool and we were okay. We were all a mess because we were so emotional that finally, you know, this magical unicorn who has made it through so much already in her young life is like actually here physically in front of us. We just wanted to like, I was crying because that's just what I do. But like even everyone else around us was, it was just such an emotional moment. And she, when she jumped out of the car, it was almost like one of those things where she got out so slowly and she's just looking at us, but her tail was wagging and she knew that she was safe. And she looked at Fiona, who wasn't even like front and center. Fiona was kind of off to the side, and both her and Lola said their hellos to us, but walked over on their own accord to Fiona and just started like kissing her. It was like, I have video. It's insane. It's insane. This moment was insane. Fiona's crying. The dogs are wagging and happy. And she just knew that her life had just been totally changed. From that moment on, every human she met was with them in vigor and happiness and love and kisses and trust. And she forgave. She moved on. She was ready. She's like, okay, I'm here for the good stuff. And thank you very much. Her life ever since then, she's in a wonderful home with a wonderful girl named Valerie, who like, I didn't know that I knew, but like through mutual friends, I actually knew. So like, you know, I feel like she's still obviously part of the family. And she's sleeps in bed under the covers. She has a little baby husky brother, you know, they go hiking all the time. Like she's good. But that was one of those pivotal stories, situations in my life that kind of just reaffirmed that even though there's so much that as a human who loves animals, that we have to kind of take in as we're doing this.
I remember, I think the week that you guys got her and you guys started fundraising for her, I remember the first time I read her story. And you see a lot of things, obviously working here at Cuddly, working with animal rescues, you do read a lot of terrible stories, a lot of bad experiences, but hers, just from the past few months, hers is always in my head. I always remember hers. I remember looking at her photo, seeing her like her legs all bent, her skin. I remember it. That like, oh, it just like warms my heart hearing that she made it through and that she was that grateful right when you got her and that she was so sweet. And that makes me so happy that she's with her family and she got a good ending.
And, you know, it's interesting. I just want to like bring it back to, you know, yes, like the evilness that she started with as far as like how humans treated her. But when we first posted her, I literally posted her just so she could be seen in that area of Louisiana so that maybe somebody there would go and pick her up. On the flip side of evil humans, people were like, well, let's get her to you. You know, like it just was like a natural evolving thing. Like, okay, well, like there's good people who actually want to help this dog and they're willing to like drive legs of a trip from Louisiana to LA to save one dog. It's heartwarming for these. It's not just us. It's like a collaboration. Good people who will come together for animals in need. So there's like such a yin and yang here.
And that's what they say. They say in animal welfare work, you do get to experience the worst parts of humanity. But then again, you get to experience the best parts of humanity. People who will drive miles for a dog they've never met, who will donate to a dog they've never seen, who will play a part in an animal's life to help get them healthy. And they would have no prior connection to them. It's like it is yin and yang. You're absolutely right.
Definitely. And I mean, I think too, it's so hard sometimes to, like the saying goes, like see the forest for the trees too. You see this big need and you're just like, it's too big. I can't do anything about it. Or it's too big. I'm only making this small dent. But then when you see like this one life changed and this one animal that's like so inspiring, and certainly, I mean, just you saying the part about like, and she didn't resent like humans, men, like all these things. It's like, oh my gosh, like I need to take a note from this dog. It's like, it is so very inspiring. And I mean, sometimes when you're so in it, you just feel like overwhelmed. But I mean, that one standout moment, I mean, certainly inspires us. I mean, so many other rescuers we know, we see the exhaust, but we also see like when one animal turns around, like they're like, okay, let's pull three more.
I'll tell quickly one other story. We had, so my big girl, my senior that I was telling you guys about, who I was, this was 2018, and I was at the shelter pulling another dog, and I happened to walk by her kennel. She's there, this humongous senior pit bull with lumps and bumps hanging off of her. And this was a very kind of bad, not bad, like not bad people, but just like overcrowded, let's say, county shelter. Yeah, I knew this dog really had little or no chance of getting out alive. And there was just something about her. And I went in the office and I asked for her notes, and they're like, oh, she's not good with dogs, she's not good with kids, which I had a lot of both at home. But I was like, you know what? I cannot leave her. So pulled her, was going to adopt her out, ended up bringing her home because again, we didn't have a foster in that moment. I was like, just thinking I'll just keep her in her own part of the house if need be. But lo and behold, she walked into the house. She was fine with everybody. And we had a little in Fatcha Day. In honor of that, we decided to rescue another senior pit bull whose story was that she was found wandering in a junkyard with a thick, thick chain padlocked to her neck and 8 feet of it hanging behind her. So she's like walking around with a chain hanging off of her. And they brought her in. And again, like she had lumps and bumps that needed to be removed, very arthritic. Her joints were all swollen. Just another big, gorgeous, I mean, I think they're gorgeous, senior pit bull. We're like, that's her. We got to get her out. One of our amazing, amazing fosters, Noemi, her freedom walk was in our stories, and Noemi's texting me, bring her to me, bring her to me. I will foster her. Over the moon about that. We named her Cherry Lynn because her name was Lynn in the shelter, but we had another Lynn. So we're like, okay, she was brown and like this beautiful brown, reddish brown color and white. I'm like, she's Cherry Lynn. We took Cherry Lynn to Noemi's, and just like my big girl story, Cherry Lynn never left. Noemi and her partner fell in love, and they have like, they foster all kinds of other dogs. And Cherry Lynn was like the silent, gentle co-leader of her pack. Sadly, she passed away yesterday. It's just, it's one of those things where we got 8 months with her, and they were for sure like the best 8 months of her entire life. Definitely in kind of that pain hangover moment at the time, she's just heartbroken, and so are we. But you can't not do it, you know, like we know too much. We can help, and she's one dog, she's one senior dog, but that senior dog got 8 months of the best love of her entire life and did not need to die cold, scared, alone in the shelter. That's why we continue on, and we just have to re-energize. We drink tequila. We kiss our we kiss our own dogs. We kind of like coil in a little ball, and then we move on.
And I know for us too, like, I mean, when you see so many animals come in with medical struggles, we'll say, you do see a small percentage of them that just don't make it, and it's just too hard. And so we always say like, yes, but the past few months has given them such a great, like last few months and different things there. It's so true. And it does make such a huge difference. I mean, and you have a firsthand experience. I mean, talk about decompression and things there, just being able to relieve some sort of like anxiety or stress in those last few days. Like granted, their body has already undergone so much stress, but like being able to have someone there by their side, to have something soft underneath them, I feel like that's all any of us can ask for is to have someone by our side. Yeah.
I mean, even if God forbid they have some terminal condition, like they still didn't die in the shelter. Like they died in the arms of somebody who they trusted.
Turning a little bit, I know your rescue, and I mean, granted, I think so many rescues have had to pivot in the past few months because of COVID and had to turn a little bit more to the internet, to social media, to everything going on there. And I know you've done that really successfully, and you've really engaged your community and you've done it in a really great way. So I'm wondering for some of those rescues that are maybe struggling a little bit, who have such a great mission, but at the same time, just don't know how to work the tools and don't know how to like strategically pull their community together. I'm wondering if you have any tips for them.
Well, you know, like I said, like I'm older, I'm not of the social media generation, but everything I've learned as far as how to work, you know, how to use it was from my younger, cool friends. But as far as the content on our social media, I do that. I guess the only thing that I really try and do with everything that I put up is, well, it's kind of twofold. We're totally transparent in what we're doing. Sometimes I feel like I overshare, but I process it in my head. Like, you know, some people, they're not in our world. They come to us for animal content, but they might not know what we're doing. So like, I really try and explain everything that either needs to happen, should happen, is going to happen, where their dollars are spent. I always post bills in estimates if a dog's in the hospital, so people can see like line items for bags of fluid or pain meds or whatever. Like I never want there to be, I want people to trust that what we're doing is in the best interest of the animals. And also like there's no funny business going on. That's very important to me because we definitely do, but what we're doing is so like near and dear to everyone's heart that I just think it's that important to be always just speaking like flying from the hip, but speaking the truth while doing it.
It's so special what you're saying too, because I think like, let's just take Instagram, for example, a platform that's pretty much known for maybe portraying life on like the brighter side and always only showing the silver lining, and Lord, those filters. I mean, that is not what we look like sometimes. And what you're saying is basically to stand out and to be unique, you're like, no, let's strip it down. Let's get real. Let's be very like straightforward and not just show like the fluffy, sweet side. Like, let's just talk numbers. Let's talk like today's struggle.
And I also, we do try and when we can keep a positive note to things, I always go back, like, I don't like shocking people. I don't like, unless it's like absolutely part of the story, like even with Meriwether, I had to edit out a lot of her photos because that's not fair to do to people. You can tell people what's going on without them having that clickbait that like just is just, who wants to see that stuff? It is part of their story and you can tell it in a way, or you can show it in a way that people aren't going to go running. And I try not to ruin people's days as often as I could ruin people's days, I guess is the point. You want people to feel involved, but you also want to do it in a way where it's not clickbait.
It's so true. Cause you, like we've said, like you probably do see so much more than like what people may realize. Like every day, I'm sure there's something else. And so I think that has helped a lot. I can only imagine, I mean, what you could be showing and what you are. And so it makes people want to follow you and they're like, okay, let's see this. And sure, like there's reality there, but also there's wonderful stories and dogs who are healing and growing and finding their forever families.
That's what it is. And I feel like too, like if you, by doing that and by trying to include people. And the one thing I'm not real good at, because at the end of the day, I just don't always have time, is responding to every comment on every post, which makes me so sad because it warms my heart that people will sit there and comment on our dogs and kind of pour out their heart towards that dog. And these are all like-minded people. These are people that we would hang out with if we knew them in person. I want to give them that respect, respond to their comments. I do try, and if there is a dog that's in a situation and people have fundraised for that dog, at least in the following post when I give an update, from my heart, like, I'm thankful to everyone who donated, and I want them to know that none of that has gone unseen. And then, you know, we'll send them thank you notes either via email or handwritten, depending on the situation. But I do think that engagement that way helps, like getting on the posts and talking and responding to people. And just speaking to people, speaking in the posts the way you would speak to people who, like-minded people who you'd be having a conversation with, and keeping it that way, keeping it simple, like keep it simple.
Such a good note. Well, so are the animals that are surrounding you right now, are any of them your personal pets, or?
They're all foster fails. They're my foster wins. So that's Chloe. Chloe. She was a feral beauty queen from Baldwin Park, who I fostered for about 5 minutes. And then she never was leaving. This is Ducky. He came from Apple Valley. He was on his last day, which I really like. Look at him. He's just perfection. This is Shuggy. She was a puppy in a box. I was at Downey picking up a major meatball pit bull, a girl walked up with puppies in a box, and she was one of the puppies. So she was the size of my hand. She was infested with ticks and fleas, like to the point where her blood, she was anemic. It was not good, but brought her and her sister home to foster. And at the time my son was 6 or 7, and he just said, we're not letting her go. It's hard because when you have a human child who is just like you and wants to keep them all, or most of them anyway. At this point, he's the one who says to me, like, we had this puppy in January. Her name was Plum. She came from East LA from the train tracks, and she came to us parvo positive. That girl spent 15 days in emergency ICU. That was quite the bill, but she lived, and she was so sick. And afterwards, I kept saying to her, if you make it through, big girl wants you to come home and cuddle with her, which is our big pit bull. And big girl does all the puppies because she's had so many puppies in her life that like the puppies just love to snuggle up with her. And I kept saying, come on, Plum, you can do this. You can do this. And so she did it. And she came to my house still so sick. She was, I can remember, like she could barely walk, but I brought her home, and it was right when we went into lockdown. I just remember standing in my kitchen with Plum in one of those puppy carrying things, like you wear your babies, you wear your puppies. The weight of the world, the weight of my life in that moment was whether or not this puppy was going to eat and live. And I remember my son, who is now 13, opening up a can, like, whatever that chicken in a can is that they were trying to feed her at the hospital, we pulled back the top and she heard it and her ears, and it was like she was famished. And my son and I were just standing in the kitchen crying over this dog. Like, finally she ate. Once you can get them to eat, because parvo is a gastrointestinal thing. Once you can get them to eat, that's a very good sign. So Plum spent weeks with us recovering, and we were all in love with her. I have enough dogs. I'm at my limit as far as my personal dogs go. And I just knew that Plum deserved to be in a family where she could be, not that she's not special at my house, but like someone else deserved a nice puppy. Who we found her a wonderful home. Plum and her sister Lila, her big sister Lila, who's also a big old pit bull. They have their own Instagram account now, so everybody follows Plum and her daily adventures. But my son was the one who said to me, "Mommy, you can't keep every dog." He goes, "How are we going to foster the next Plum if you keep this Plum?" He feels it, you know. He loved her too. I mean, she slept cuddled up next to him every single night when she was with us. He cried when she left, but he knew it was the right thing to do.
And I love the name Plum. Like the entire time I'm like, ooh, my next foster is going to be a Plum.
So for our little fun questions, I know you said you do have quite a few of your own. So you can either pick one or you can kind of answer them for all of them. But the first question is, if your dog or one of your dogs were president, what would be the first thing they did?
Well, if Big Girl, my senior pit bull, were president, the first thing she would do would be to show the world, once given an opportunity, how amazing people, dogs, breed specific areas, cities, whatever, what life could be like if people just gave an opportunity, if they were just given an opportunity or put in the right situation.
Okay, so for the next question, what is the naughtiest thing your pet's ever done?
Probably Ducky. So I have two males. I have Ducky and Taco. Ducky's on my lap. I've had them both now, like most of their... Taco was another puppy in a box at Baldwin Park that I brought home. So I've had him his whole life. He has zero excuses. And Ducky was an adult already when he came to us. But they're boy dogs and they're competitive with each other in the house. So, you know, they're one-upping each other is to pee on my sofa, the end of my sofa. And the two of them to this day, and they know, they'll look at me and they'll pee and they'll walk. And I, like, at this point, I'm just like, I'm done screaming. But that's their little A, one-upping each other, and B, showing me who the bosses are. Even today, when we walked into our store, they come with me to work. They're here all the time. And yes, there's other dogs here. And yes, some of them are male dogs. But like my dog should know that they're special. They're going to go home with me at night. Like, this is their place too. What the heck? Like, you don't need to put a fresh coat of pee on the side of the table.
Okay, and this last question can be a little more difficult, but just try and answer it the best you can. If you had to pick one life motto, what would it be?
Follow your heart. I mean, my heart has brought me to the realization that I was put on this earth to serve a purpose, to be a guide for those who can't do it themselves. My passion, I feel like it's my purpose. And these animals are my people. If you don't follow your heart and follow your instincts and follow your gut, or at least for me, then I wouldn't be living my truth.
And it's such like a brave and bold thing to do too. Like, it's rarely easy.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm blessed too, you know, like my life has put me in a situation where like I could actually honor that. Or I don't know. I think I'm also one of those people who I'm Pisces and you're the dog. And I was like, you know what? This is my path and it's what I'm going to do and I'll make it happen. And I do that every single day.
Ellen, this is so amazing. We loved hearing about everything that you're doing. And we can't wait to partner with you in the future on so many other things.
Thank you for having me. And it's so nice to put faces to your names. And thank you guys. Okay, first of all, thank you guys for what you're doing. I don't know how you Cuddly came to be, but holy crap, like what a concept. And it's so amazing the amount of help you've given to so many.
you're what make, I mean, if we didn't have the happy photos and like the inspiring stories, so it probably would be an impossible task, but you guys make it all worth it. So thank you.
I feel blessed to be partnering with you on different animals. So thank you.
It was so inspiring talking to Ellen today. We loved hearing how small contributions can change an animal's life forever. Something as little as holding a leash can make such a huge difference. We also talked about the benefits of CBD and also the animals whose stories have inspired so many rescuers around the world. If you want to learn a little bit more about Deity Animal Rescue, you can check our show notes or our blog.
And be sure to rate, like, and subscribe this podcast and follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's C-U-D-D-L-Y. Thanks, guys.